Welcome to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. What did George Washington do that you might not know about? What did Abe Lincoln know that could change the way you think about the Civil War? You'll learn about all that and more on this special show designed to restore excitement in American history. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Grateful American TV Show. We are an interactive multimedia project designed to restore enthusiasm in American history for kids and adults. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, your co-host with David Bruce Smith, who is the founder of the Grateful American Foundation. We are here today at the magnificent Mount Vernon Estate on the back porch where George and Martha Washington used to have cocktails in the evening with Kurt Vibrant, who is the president and CEO of the Mount Vernon Ladies Association, which has been in existence since 1853. Thank you for being on the show, Kurt.
Thanks, folks. Thank you, David, for having
Thank
me.
Thank you.
Delighted to have you all here at Mount Vernon.
So this is the most magnificent setting, right on the Potomac. Tell us a little bit about where we are.
So this home was built originally in the early 1730s, called Little Hunting Creek. It was renamed by Washington's half-brother as Mount Vernon, recognizing the incredible view up here on the promontory, and also in he served in the Royal Navy under Admiral Vernon. And he died suddenly at an early age, and Washington ultimately inherited the house from his widow. And it was Washington who then sort of built the home to what we see here. Across the way is Maryland. So the Potomac River basically seeds to Maryland. There are two counties over there. Most people don't know this, but in the early 1850s, the house was in total disrepair. And so a woman who was going down the river encouraged her daughter, Ann Pamela Cunningham, to save the home of our country. It's a great story because John Augustine Washington, who was his great-grandnephew, Washington's great-grandnephew, was trying to sell the house to either the Commonwealth of Virginia or to the federal government. Neither of them wanted any part of it. And Pamela Cunningham, dating back to 1853, over a period of about 5 or 6 years, raised through a grassroots effort $200,000 to buy the home from John Augustine Washington. And she did that forming the Mount Vernon Ladies Association, which is the oldest historic preservation organization in America.
$200,000, wow.
And so then sort of fast forward to the 50s and 60s, when the property across the way was going to be, was slated for development, one of the women, Frances Payne Bolton, who was at once a member of the ladies and also a member of Congress, bought property over there personally, created the first land trust, and then gifted it to what is now Piscataway Park.
Had the ladies not been able to raise the $200,000 to pay for the home, would it have had a Montpelier kind of destiny? Would it have been, you know, chopped up among different owners, or what would have happened?
It was slated for development, so certainly the property would have been subdivided. Whether someone would have bought the home and kept it intact, we don't know. But the other interesting thing is that there were only three items original to Washington's time that were in the mansion when the ladies acquired it, which was really sort of 1859, 1860. And over time, through gift or acquisition, about 35% of what's in the house now is original to the time, and the home has been really restored. And the other really interesting fact is that we are private. We've never taken any government money, so this has all been done really with the munificence of individuals and foundations, and you know, we have a lot of very generous donors.
What were those three objects that were in the house?
There was the key to the Bastille, which was delivered to Washington by Lafayette, because he thought that Washington was the father of the Revolution. There was the iconic Houdon bust, which I'm sure we'll see when we go over to the museum. And there was also a print inside of the Bastille.
And the woman who bought it, I believe, was married to Riggs, as in Riggs Bank.
Ann Pamela Cunningham actually was never married, but there was a connection to Riggs Bank through Tracy, who was one of the early people.
So you came from a corporate background, so this in a way is a complete change in career. So what lured you to Mount Vernon?
You know, first of all, it was serendipity. There was a woman that I had worked with 35 years ago at Time Inc. who was on the board, and so that's how I sort of got on the radar of the ladies. They contacted me. I looked at what the description was and what the opportunity was, and I said immediately, I'd like to do this. Part of it, I'd say, is, deeply personal. My father was he was the first in his generation, a child of depression, first in his generation to go to college, served in the Navy during World War II in the submarines, and always sort of instilled in us the ethos of service.
So your perception of George Washington then versus your perception of George Washington now?
In truth, I knew a lot about the founding era, but not that much about him as an individual. And I think it is safe to say that given many of the actions that he, decisions he made, without him, it's unlikely we would have had the, the Republic. I believe that.
Knowing what you know about George Washington,
yes,
is he knowable?
Joe Ellis would say, that he's the man on the moon, and that, he's much beloved but not understood. But I think if you actually dig deep, two things: you can begin to understand him a bit more as really a human being, and also as you dig deep, you become even more impressed by the decisions he made, and especially about his willingness to sort of give up power in the interest of the good of others and the national good.
Okay, and if you study them, Martha and George.
Yes.
Are they knowable?
Oh yeah, that's a great question. They spent great periods of time away from each other. Unfortunately, as Martha elected to burn most of the letters, so virtually all of the correspondence between the two of them is lost. We do have one letter that was written in at the moment that Washington left here in the interest of actually committing treason. He was about to take over as commander of the Continental Army, and he was in Philadelphia. He had a brief moment. His men were all around him. He penned a note to Martha, and he said, "I retain an unalterable affection for you, which neither time nor distance can diminish." So it's clear that, they loved each other a great deal, and I think they were, she was his anchor. She understood that many times she would have to sacrifice for the greater good. It's clear that she probably did not want him to take over as the first president of the United States. Didn't want to pick up and go to Philadelphia. There were lots of sort of protocols or conventions that had come down from Europe that she had to sort of accept, like not being able to go out to dinner in a private home. But she did that for him, and she was incredibly devoted to him, including following him through many of the campaigns.
Valley Forge and all
so,
that.
And she was much beloved by the soldiers, and would intercede on their behalf, would try to help them out, and so really sort of a woman of the people, if you will.
Okay, so I want to take a little poetic license here.
Sure.
If George Washington was either your brother or your best friend, how would you describe him?
I would say, dashing, nearly 6'3", and so probably a head taller than most people during his time. I would say actually a great dancer, so there's an side to him. He enjoyed a good time. He had great integrity, which served him well in the Army as he presided over the Constitutional Convention and then during his time as president.
So what would it have been like out here on the veranda in the evening?
Well, in truth, he was away from the estate for 16 years. 8 as the head of the Continental Army, and then 8 again in the presidency. And when he was here, he was a very active plantation owner, so he was out working all the time. And also, he had the disadvantage that when he wasn't here, it wasn't moving along nearly as quickly as he hoped it would, so he would come back and find a lot of things in disarray. But he did occasionally come out here. We've acquired a very famous painting by Benjamin Latrobe, who was one of the architects of the Capitol, and it shows Martha and George out here taking coffee after dinner. There would be children playing in many instances, and they were, of course, very gracious hosts. You could turn up here, unannounced, but with a letter of introduction, and they would welcome you in. And in the year following his presidency, he had more than 800 people here, overnight guests. She referred to it as sort of a well-appointed tavern. So there was a lot of social activity here.
So while he was gone, there's two big blocks of time, 8 years.
Yeah.
Was she able to manage in the same way that Abigail Adams didn't have slaves, but was she able to manage as well as Abigail Adams?
I think the answer is that during that time, especially, she was responsible for sort of the upkeep of the household and dealing with that. So where he would have a farm manager or an estate manager who might be working on specific projects, sort of the management of all of the folks that were living here really fell to her.
Is there any record of what kind of mistress to the slaves that she was? Was she kind or cruel or both?
I'm sure there is some evidence of that, but I don't know the answer. I do know that, as I'm sure you two know, that a certain number of the slaves that lived here at Mount Vernon came to Mount Vernon as dowered slaves from the Custis family, her first family. Her husband died and she was widowed. And then some were actually Washington slaves. He received his first slaves from his father at the age of 12 or 13. I think that they wrestled, deeply with sort of how they might end, the slavery here, especially because they'd all intermarried. So were he to free his, they wouldn't know exactly what to do with hers. And if the ones that were his left and they were married to hers, it created a huge problem. He freed one slave, Billy Lee, who was his manservant during the war, and then he made accommodation in his will that at the moment of her death, the rest of the slaves would be freed.
And they were?
And they were. And I think actually also that at the end of his life, he was really thinking about how to significantly reduce his land holdings in order that he didn't require, he didn't have a need for labor in some of his agrarian pursuits.
Just 500 acres if he owned, is that correct?
He will have owned here at the high water mark about 8,000 acres, and it was divided in five farms. So, and those five farms were managed, fairly independently. Well, they were planted the same way, so he was big into crop rotation and had studied that. But
so his version of Mount Vernon was 8,000?
8,000 acres. Yeah, at the high water mark, there was 8,000 acres here. That doesn't take into account the 70,000 acres that he owned, mostly as a consequence of his time surveying, which was really dating to sort of, he became, as I think you all know, he became the official surveyor to Fairfax County, to Culpeper County at age 16, and then he was at 17, he became the surveyor, and then he realized that he could make a lot more money doing it privately, so he only did that for about a year and a half in an official capacity. He became a surveyor on his own. As he took the money, he reinvested it, and so ultimately he owned 70,000 acres between the Potomac and the Ohio River.
So how would you rate George Washington as president?
Well, first of all, he was by all accounts the richest American president. Not that that matters, but it just sort of falls on the comment about his vast land holdings. I think that he had a very clear vision that he was, as the executive branch, if you sort of think about the thing of whether he would be the monarch, and he did not want to do that. There were clearly people who thought even having an executive branch in the nascent government was a mistake. So he inherited something that was having to be built from whole cloth in terms of what it would mean. And I think he did a really great job at setting many of the precedents that exist today. And he clearly thought about those things that he was going to put into place and how they might be continued, beyond that. So, after his second presidency and when Adams took over.
So is that good, great, or greatest?
I will take David Rubenstein's line. While Lincoln saved the Union, we would not have had one without Washington. So, it's hard to say that, but I'd say he's certainly in the top couple.
Okay, not to leave Martha out.
Yeah.
Is her first ladyship, or her reign as first lady, rateable?
By the time you reach 1789, she clearly is interested in returning to Mount Vernon, and she is, I think, wary about all of the public things that he has done, and even perhaps whether or not it's taking a toll on itself. So she goes to Philadelphia reluctantly, but realizing she needs to do that for the good of the country. She is a gracious hostess. She welcomes people to her home all the time. There's not that much record about sort of her political affiliations and whether she, played a part in any of his decisions. But she clearly is there as his anchor and supporting him during a time that she would rather be back here. And there are probably many days when he would rather be back here too, but he always answered the siren song of serving his country.
So definitely a partnership.
Definitely a partnership, for sure. Absolutely, in the truest sense.
Thank you so much for being with us. You are watching The Grateful American TV Show, a video production of David Bruce Smith's Grateful American Foundation. Watch more episodes at www.gratefulamericantv.com. And follow our TV show, radio show, monthly newsletter, and upcoming books at our website, www.gratefulamericanfoundation.com. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, your co-host. On behalf of David Bruce Smith and myself, we look forward to restoring enthusiasm in American history for you and your kids. We'll talk to you soon.